The opinions expressed during this program did not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its board, underwriters, volunteers, or members.
That's right.
That is right.
Okay, well, it's just after 4 o'clock, and this is Out of the Box. So next 2 hours, we'll be on the air here talking about what's going on the island, around the world, and in the galaxy. And you can call in and let us know what you think about it at 826-7771. Expecting a call from a guest here in a minute here, but I think we're going to move on and get the show started.
Sure. Do you want to start off with the... I should wish you a happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary of what?
Happy anniversary of our glorious atomic attacks. 68 years ago, 2 days ago, and then tomorrow are the 68th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki nuclear assaults.
Very auspicious dates.
Yeah.
Hope it never happens again.
Yeah,
that
well,
should be the message with that.
It should be, and you know the way to do that is to work towards that. I don't know how much we've accomplished in the last 68 years of working away from that.
Well, there's been a lot of, I guess, there's been pros and cons or gains and losses, but overall the number of nuclear weapons on the planet are having reduced to about 25% of what they were back then.
Yeah, but they pack a much bigger punch.
Yeah, they do. And so I don't know if they're more or less likely to be used now. I mean, it used to be that they had this policy of mutual assured destruction. So
mad.
Nobody would be mad enough to use nuclear weapons because they would just get pummeled afterwards.
Yeah, with after attacks. But then now you have the whole Aegis missile defense system stuff, where one side, that would be the U.S., can attack somebody and then suppress their ability to defend themselves.
Yeah, they might think that they can get away with it.
They might think that, yeah. And then, of course, we're only one of the five agreed-upon nuclear powers in the world. There are several other nations who have nuclear weapons who are either covertly admit they have them or pretend they don't, but do, Israel, Pakistan, and India.
Right. Okay. Now, the tensions have been pretty high on the India-Pakistan border and also on the India and China border.
That's true, and as well as the Japan-Chinese sea.
Right, and Israel's obviously at war with most of their neighbors.
Right, they have non-recognized borders with virtually all of their neighbors.
Right. So, it doesn't seem like we're any safer these days, I don't think. But
for some reason, I don't know if maybe it's just dumb luck, but we haven't blowed ourselves up yet.
Yeah, I guess there's been some close calls.
Some mighty close calls.
There was one incident, when was this, back in the 80s or something like that, when some Russian engineer sitting at a radar screen started seeing missiles coming in. And
bogeys?
And just said... wait a second, there's something wrong here, and they're ready to push the button to launch a counterattack. And he said, no, I think there's something a little fishy about this. There must be something wrong. And he did not report it up the ladder and up the chain of command. And it turned out it was some faulty equipment. And so it could very well have come, to blows at that point.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised, astonished, really, that we haven't done something incredibly stupid on one Tuesday or another.
Yeah, just accidentally.
Just by blowing it,
right,
so to speak.
Yeah. Well, they've lost them, quite a few of them, off planes. They'd be flying along. They just fall off the wing into the water or, into some rural area. There's been several that have just fallen. But, they don't go critical. They didn't blow up.
Hmm.
They just spread contamination all over the place. But, luckily
I've never heard about that.
Yeah, yet. There's been several incidents like that.
Well, I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I'm just saying I've never heard of that before.
Well, it doesn't show up in the newspaper. We find out about it years later. So fortunately, nothing has happened there. But I'd feel a lot better if we just got rid of them all.
Well, and in the You've Come a Long Way, Baby department, Japan just launched their largest battleship since World War II. The, what's it called? The Izumo. It looks a lot like an aircraft carrier. It floats a lot like an aircraft carrier. It's got a flat top like an aircraft carrier. they say it looks and quacks and walks a lot like a duck, but it's not an aircraft carrier.
It's a destroyer.
It's a destroyer, right.
Which is much better, right?
Right. It's so much friendlier sounding.
Yeah, right. Now, for a long time, Japan was forbidden to have a navy and army after World War II. They
right.
said no more.
Right.
But now...
they're resurgent.
Well, I think it's in large part is the U.S. has been pushing them to increase their military spending.
Sure.
Because, for one, we sell the most military hardware
exactly.
around, so
that's
good for our
That's a good, good for our economy, anyway.
Right, yeah. But also, we're looking for allies in our adventures around the world, and
right.
it's good to have a country that we control to, we say, hey, send over that destroyer.
Yeah, that aircraft carrier-like vessel.
Right, and we're trying to provoke incidents with China over some disputed islands, and so I think...
These are the Spratly Islands in the South China Sea.
Yeah, so U.S. seems to be pushing Japan and a lot of other countries to join in the fray kind
yeah,
of thing.
Once again, the U.S. is number one, leading the world towards peace.
Yeah.
In a sort of circuitous path towards peace.
I think it's more like pieces.
Pieces, P-I-E-C-S?
Yes, we're driving the world to pieces.
All right, well, as long as we're number one in something, that's really all that some Americans seem to care about.
Right. And speaking of Japan and nuclear holocausts, the situation in Fukushima is back in the news.
Oh, well, it itself never stopped leaking. It never went away, but it's back in the news.
It's back in the news,
right.
Yeah. For some reason, there wasn't a lot of press on the issue.
I think because it's really depressing.
Depressing for the press. But also, the nuclear industry in the U.S. and the world was making a big push at the very same time.
Yeah, just beforehand.
Just beforehand, and trying to tout themselves as the answer to global warming.
Right, the new green power.
Green
nuclear power.
Yeah, it doesn't release any carbon dioxide because it doesn't burn.
Yeah, it's carbon
anything.
Neutral.
Which is not really true.
No, Dave, it's false.
It's downright false.
It's not
it
true.
It takes
it's
a
false.
Lot of energy and releases a lot of carbon dioxide
yeah,
to process the fuel.
Sure, to get it in the first place.
And
to level those mountains.
To mine it and to
yeah.
process it and transport it.
Which you really can't separate from the whole process of making power because you can't
no,
do it without
right.
it.
That's right. And so... turns out it's extremely messy, and this is a interesting example of it. But it turns out that even though it hasn't been in the newspaper, it has been continuing to leak 300 tons of contaminated water.
Yeah,
every day.
330 tons is what I heard.
Every day from the wrecked Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean.
Right. That's what you call bad.
That is not good, yeah.
No.
And also, I've seen maps that show the dispersion of the chemicals or the nuclear material throughout the Pacific.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically covered the whole northern Pacific and is now seeping into the southern Pacific.
Oh,
and,
dear.
The waters around Hawaii are completely impacted. Low levels, but... how much radiation do you want?
Well,
is enough?
They used to say that the solution to pollution... is dilution, and there's no better ocean to dilute something in than the Pacific Ocean, since it's the biggest one on the planet.
Well, the real saying was the solution to pollution is not dilution.
Oh,
yeah.
Did I get that wrong?
You got that wrong.
I got
yeah.
that wrong.
So the EPA,
small mistake.
The EPA would not allow dilution of waste to make them under the limits for hazardous waste or anything like that. So it's the... dilution is not the solution.
So I was so close, just one little word away.
Yeah, it just flips it upside down. Huh. But anyway, so the water levels, the groundwater levels around the Fukushima Daiichi power plant have been rising now. They can't control it. They don't know where the nuclear cores are either. They have completely burned.
They're somewhere down there.
Yeah. Well, they completely burned through the bottom of the containment, through a several feet thick layer of concrete underneath that, and they're now, just boiling away into groundwater and going for the middle of the earth. So it's not a good situation. They say it'll take 40 years to clean this up before they can perhaps recover the waste fuel material.
Do they have any estimates about how much nuclear radiation is going to be released in the environment over the next four decades?
Well, I think it's already at or greater than the amount released during Chernobyl.
Well, I heard actually it was 100 times more than the Hiroshima and Nagasaki attacks. The amount of radiation that was
right,
released.
Right, that's a different thing.
Yeah, that is different. But still, it's in the capital B, capital A, capital D category. So, but it is a nice day today, just to kind of balance that out.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, aloha, Dave and Jonathan.
Aloha.
I've become an NHK junkie, so I've been following their spin of... Especially
and tell listeners what N, H, and K stand for.
Well, the Japanese station you get on your local TV lineup.
Okay.
And I usually watch it between one. They had the headlines at one and two our time, and it's just to see interesting to see how they spin this. And the folks in Japan seem to be very trusting individuals of authority.
Yeah, they don't go out and protest much. You know, they take things in stride for the most part.
The latest report that I saw today, gentlemen, is that it's something more on the order of 1 million gallons leaking per day in total.
Well, that might be the same number as 330 tons. You know, tons and gallons.
It's more like the order of 1 million, because they're counting not just the runoff from the powered facility, but the saturated ground is also running off. Then there's an area of the contaminated soil, which is then leaking from above the reactor, because they've been trying to figure out how to store this stuff. So now their greatest brainstorm is, oh, we're going to freeze the ground. So, I mean, all these interim stop gaps until finally...
Are they going to do that this summer, freeze the ground?
Well... They're trying to do it right now, currently. But the thing is, so finally the Japanese government itself has stepped in and said, well, listen, private business, you're really messing up, so I guess we got to step in. So I love to see how the different nations spin their troubles and the troubles of the world.
Yeah, well, this one's going to be spinning for quite some time, I think.
Well, it's one thing.
Do you guys happen to know what France does, because they got all that nuclear reactor business going? What do they do with all their powered fissionable material?
They reprocess a lot of it, and they reuse it and then reprocess it. So when they take used spent fuel rods out of one facility, they reprocess it, you know, get as much as they can out of what's left. I'm not sure what they do.
I think they put it into croissants.
Croissants?
Croissants.
That's a reason to go quickly over there.
I'm not sure what they do ultimately.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I mean, they use the fast breeder reactors, or?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. They have they get a lot of, probably more of their electricity from nuclear than anyone in the world.
Now, how do we stand in terms of the real estate agent's bomb? You know what I mean?
No.
The
real estate agent bomb?
You know, the one that was called, like, you know, where it kills, like, people, not buildings.
Oh, you mean the neutron bomb.
Exactly.
Ah, okay.
The electron pulse.
Right.
Something like that?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how I would characterize it. Kawhi's real estate agent dream.
Boy, sir, you have a lovely sense of humor.
Well... It's either that or, like, put your head in a bucket, you know. It's like, well, what choice does one have? I mean, after America made the statement during the Bushian era that, you know, we're never going to allow anybody to get ahead of us. No way. We're going to be number one top dog, right?
Well, it just depends on what the contest is, though. I mean, because, like, are we talking sandcastle contest?
We're talking about, you know, military.
Oh, well, see, that's not as much fun.
Well, I just don't like the arrogance of our lovely country. It sort of like makes me sick, you know. I thought Obama bin Laden was going to be different, but I guess not. Anyway, I'll continue to listen. Thank you.
All right, aloha.
Bye-bye.
Speaking of sandcastle contests, I think we've got one coming up here on lovely Kauai this weekend, Saturday, starting in around 9 o'clock or 11 o'clock or so up in Hanalei Bay. Are you familiar with that at all, Dave?
No, I'm not. I have heard about it in the past, but I'm not sure what's going on with that.
Well, for some reason that I don't understand, it's not one of the top 10 sandcastle contests in the world, but it is happening here on Kauai, and it's free for all folks who want to get involved. And what else?
Are you going to participate?
I think so. I'm certainly going to go and watch. And
you're not going to make a sandcastle.
I won't build one myself.
Well, it's more sand sculpture, isn't it? Not just castles.
It doesn't have to be just a castle. That's true.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty amazing ones in the past years.
And we're hoping that Julian Miller, the organizer of this sand castle or sand sculpture contest, will be calling in the next 10 minutes or so, or else he will miss his window of opportunity. Yeah.
So a couple things then about this Fukushima incident now is the company that's in charge of the cleanup or the remediation or stabilization, whatever you want to call it.
Freezing the ground.
This is the company that caused the leak. They're the company that was running the plant. I guess they owned it or whatever. But they're still in charge there. After all the mistakes they've made and after everything that they've messed up in the past, they're still in charge.
Why, isn't that great?
Why haven't they been, thrown in jail by now?
Well, let's put a pin in that very good question and take a call here and see if this is perhaps Mr. Miller.
Caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Aloha, caller. You're welcome to Out of the Box.
Hello, anybody there?
A shy caller.
Okay. Somehow there was nobody there. But anyway, so it's the same thing happened in the Gulf of Mexico a couple years ago with the BP disaster.
Was TEPCO responsible for that BP spill? No.
Well, maybe. It's all the corporation. They let the corporation who caused the problem clean up the problem. And then, when it took them 90 days, it was still spewing out there constantly, rather than getting, a team of the best engineers and experts in the world in that field to go in there and come up with a solution and solve it quicker. Instead, they just let the company do it. The company has, their own motives at hand. They are trying to minimize the costs to their company, their bottom line. They're trying to minimize what any negative repercussions to them, anything that might make them look bad. So they're going to continue to destroy information. And that's what BP did. That's what BP did in the Gulf, they found out, is that they destroyed evidence that showed they were responsible for the whole thing. And so, why we continue to allow the company that caused the problem to sit there and fumble around for 2 years and to, attempt to, or pretend to try to fix the situation is unconscionable. Because in the meantime, we've got millions of gallons of water flowing into the Pacific Ocean. We've contaminated all of the fish in the Pacific Ocean. The fish from Japan is inedible. The fish we get in Hawaii now has measurable levels of radioactivity in them that wasn't there before. And yet, we're still waiting for the company to come up with an answer. It's been 2 years now, and they don't have a clue. They say it's going to take 40 years now to clean up. Where is the blue ribbon panel of nuclear experts and people, emergency responders who could come up with an idea of how to fix this situation? Instead, we just let the corporation sit there and fumble around and continue to contaminate the entire planet. So, I don't know why we do this. We, as a people on this planet.
As a species.
Why do we allow these corporations to just run roughshod over us and sit there while they're making money on a disaster like this and continue to operate like there's no problem whatsoever? This is the biggest disaster humans have ever created, I think, one of them. And so, why we let TEPCO just sit there and continue to do nothing, I don't know. If I were the president of Japan, I would have thrown them all in jail, dissolved the company, and just get the best people in the world on the problem and get it, stabilized at least. But that's not the world that we live in, I guess. Okay, let's see. What else is in the news?
Well, I did want to talk about the Sandcastle contest.
Oh, you do? You have more information about it now?
I got more information about that.
Okay.
Yeah. The schedule events, it starts at 11 o'clock. It's free registration for the start of the event. And that's going to be at 11:30. There'll be a free lesson by a world-renowned sand sculptor and teacher, Jeff Peterson. And then people start digging and sculpting and building their sandcastles. And then they'll go until 3:30. There'll be a judging, and 4 o'clock will be awards. And this is all up in Honolulu by the pier. So that should be a good day had by many.
By the new pier.
By the new pier.
New pier house, anyway.
Yeah, the revamped.
Yeah, it's really nice. They did a great job on
it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to that.
It's beautiful. Hopefully it'll last forever.
Well, nothing lasts forever, Dave.
Radiation lasts forever.
Even radiation only lasts for tens of thousands of years.
Hundreds of thousands of years.
Well, I suppose it depends on what the half-life is, right?
Which radionuclide we're talking about.
Right.
But anyway, that's all I've got on radioactivity.
And there will be prizes.
Prizes?
Yeah. There'll be a whole scad of prizes.
Okay.
For all different kinds of contests. There'll be individual contests, cakey contests, family teams. And then I think there's even going to be a political message contest awards as well. So if somebody makes like a GMO castle, for example, or an anti-GMO castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should be fun.
Anti-GMO castle. All right. Okay, let's see. Another thing in the news here. President Obama was scheduled to meet with Prime Minister? Premier?
What, President. I think he's
President
the President Putin.
I thought he was like Prime Minister now. Back again as whatever. Anyway.
I thought he was Prime Minister in the interim, and he's President again.
Oh, President, then he was Prime Minister, now he's President again.
I think that's correct.
Maybe that's it. So he was Obama was supposed to meet with Putin before the G20 summit that is held in Leningrad.
Sweden?
No, it's in Russia.
Is it?
It's in southern Russia. But anyway, he was supposed to meet there. But he canceled that visit.
He had a little Snowden tizzy fit.
He was a little upset over the Snowden affair. So, because Russia allowed Edward Snowden to stay in Russia for a year, up to a year, until he can get his extradition process arranged anyway. So he doesn't have to wait in the airport for the whole time. So he's loose. Running the streets of Moscow, and President Obama was upset about that, so he canceled his meeting with Putin.
That's not his official story. Officially, he said they hadn't made enough progress on their bilateral agreements to warrant an individual discussion.
Oh, and it was just a coincidence that it's all happening right around the time.
It could have been, and I also heard that it could be that Obama is upset about some of the recent anti-homosexual legislation that's been passed in Russia.
Okay. Well, why don't they talk about it? If he's got problems with, why didn't they sit down and talk about it? That's what they were supposed to do, meet and sit and talk. Now, the U.S. is upset because Russia will not extradite Snowden back to the U.S.
No, they were disappointed.
That's right. They were disappointed that he would not extradite. Now, even though we don't even have an extradition treaty with Russia.
Right.
And we, the United States government.
Not you or me.
Us, the U.S., we regularly refuse to extradite criminals to other countries who we do have extradition treaties with at their own discretion.
Right. That's called American exceptionalism, Dave. And we don't have to follow the rules that we want other people to follow because of the wonderful things we does. I don't know why exactly that is.
Well, evidently, we're expected to get some more information from Snowden's files. He turned over about 15,000 more pages over to Greenwald. Is that his name? Glenn Greenwald?
Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah.
From the Guardian UK.
Guardian, yeah. And so we're supposed to get a lot more information about that. But one thing that this brings up is Vladimir Putin, is he a good guy or bad guy?
Yeah, probably probably not a simple answer to that question.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be on the right side of a lot of issues.
Well, I would say he's on the right side of some issues, like riding bareback through rugged terrain.
Oh, do you like that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Do you wish our president would do that there? I don't know. Does he?
You know,
he doesn't quite have the physique for
it
that.
It would make Obama look cooler, but Obama needs to put on a few pounds, I think,
yeah,
in order to pull that off.
Because he's more of the basketball player kind of.
It's because he smokes cigarettes, is why.
But anyway, when Putin came in, probably 10 years ago or something like that, Russia was pretty much a basket case. After the fall of the empire there, they were overrun by the mafia. You know, they were just looted
by the oligarch, the petro oligarchs.
Yeah, they were looted by the oligarchs and the banksters and everything. They stole the oil industry and the resource industry, the treasury. Everything was all gone. And so when he came in, so he has kind of built the country back up.
But
again.
He didn't come in from nowhere. He came in from the KGB, is where he used to be.
Right. But he also kicked out the banksters. He closed the Russian Central Bank. He opened it up as a Russian institution. So it's not a Rothschild central bank like we've got. It is now a Russian bank. So, you know, he did the right thing there. He's defending Syria, defending the attacks on Syria. Because, you know.
What does that mean?
Well, Syria is not the situation in Syria now is not a civil war, as is reported in the U.S. press. It's more of a proxy war where the U.S., Israel, U.K. are supplying weapons to some outside instigators who go in and...
Can't you have several wars going on at the same time?
You can, yeah, obviously. But anyway, and so he is trying to call out the hypocrisy of the West, saying you shouldn't be stoking the flames and destroying this country for your own benefit, for your own geopolitical benefit.
If you want my personal opinion on Putin.
So he seems to be on the right side of the issue of Syria as well.
If you want my personal opinion on Putin, that you can rely on Putin to pursue his perceived self-interest. So I would say he's not a good guy or a bad guy. He's just another guy out there working in his own interest. And sometimes it's beneficial to oppose the U.S. Aims, and sometimes it's not.
Right. But anyway, I think it is a complex question. I'm kind of interested in it because he does seem to be – he's obviously very powerful. He seems to be on the right side of a lot of issues.
Some issues.
A lot of issues, I will say, more than a couple.
Okay, we're gonna diverge our opinions here.
Okay.
Because it's okay for us to have different opinions.
Right.
It's good for you, the callers, to have different opinions too.
But it's hard to get any real press on him here because, you know, he's Russian. We're still – basically at war with them.
Oh, that's old Cold War thinking, Dave.
But evidently we didn't get the message the Cold War was over because it's not.
Well, you know what?
We never stopped.
You know what I thought was pretty funny about all that is that in response to canceling the meeting, the Russians have expressed their disappointment. So we have two mutually disappointed parties now.
Who aren't talking to each other.
That's so sad.
Come on, children.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Okay, hopefully my phone won't hang up where I'm driving. But I remember Obama, who's supposed to be a good communicator, him and Putin were together talking, and their phones were still off. It was about a year ago, I guess. And some kind of agreement about something that the Republicans got very upset about. Do you remember that?
Not enough information for me to say yes or no.
Well, let's see. We're trying to put missile batteries in Poland to supposedly intercept Iranian missiles, but that didn't fly. They didn't,
so to speak. Was that a joke, Dave? You make a joke.
The missiles
didn't fly.
No. That excuse.
It's a bummer that Obama won't meet with Putin because this is a perfect time to talk about, you know, whatever it is they need to talk about. You know, whether it's what's his name? The guy, I'm so sorry, I forgot his name.
Edward Snowden?
Yeah, Edward Snowden. Or, you know, or other things as well. I mean, it's always good to communicate, you know. And if you're mad, let him know. Don't just cancel the appointment, but talk about it. But
right.
I don't think Snowden should be extradited. I'm really, I kind of like to know about certain things that are going on. You
like
know?
Massive unwarranted state surveillance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that kind of goes on the list there.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm disappointed that the president is disappointed in Russia.
Well, I share your disappointment, and it's sad when our leaders can't find their words to use. Use your words. Use your words.
But in more importantly, what you guys were talking about, Fukushima, I mean, it seems like we should have sent our best people, engineers or experts.
We actually did. We actually did send our best people. They're the ones who designed the nuclear power plant in the first place that failed so spectacularly.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not for nuclear power to begin with because of these types of situations, you know. So we sent our best people, apparently, but why is it, you know, I mean, it seems like so big, this situation, that it's almost too big for us to take care of. I mean, you know, it's a nuclear reactor, and it's, you know, melting or whatever, you know. It's too big of a problem. It's like our county council doesn't want to deal with the Bill 2491 because it's bigger than what they want to take on.
Right. They don't want to admit there's a problem with nuclear power. You know, all of people doing monitoring around the world afterwards.
They basically
discredited them all. The EPA stopped doing their own monitoring. They stopped responding to it. They just pretended it didn't exist.
Right. And that's a problem because there is a huge fallout from that nuclear reactor going down. And even though it has been a couple of years, it's still a major problem. And we forget about it because we're so focused on Edward Snowden or, you know, Trayvon Martin, you know, all important stuff, you know, but this is huge.
Right.
You know, it's really threatening our health potentially.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, too big to fix is probably too big to try. And I really wish that we would recognize that and back away. But, hey, the truth is that we all want the power to be on. That's why we throw the lights on. That's why we have the extra fridge out in the carport. That's why we run our dryer during the sunny days when we could have stuff hanging on the line. We all want that power, so.
Yeah, that should be sort of. I mean, within our own county, you know, I mean, we're in the right direction with going without plastic bags. But now we should be, like, it bothers me that Princeville doesn't allow clotheslines. I live in Kilauea, and we have a clothesline. We use the dryer if it's really rainy a bunch of days and we need to, and it's a gas dryer. But, you know, I got in trouble for saying this, but I'll say it again. Some caller.
Good for you, caller. I don't know what you're about to say, but good for you.
I'm saying that after the hurricane, it was a very nice time without electricity for 2 months. We managed, and I don't think we need that much electricity. We're so plugged in. We're so computerized. We can't do without our cell phones, you know. And it's a shame, and we should take a few steps backwards in moving forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha. I would just like to follow up quickly about, you know, Edward Snowden and stuff. He's a hero in my book, for sure, standing up for what's right and the Constitution of the United States. And Putin, to me, seems like a great president. And you can, you know, watch RT on Dish Network, Channel 280, and it's really, you know, it has documentaries occasionally on Russia, and it's really a good channel.
But you know what RT stands for, don't you?
Russia Today.
Right, Russia Today. So
yeah, but it's so much better than our corporate paid-for media, because, see,
when they're doing topics on the U.S.
not free press like you guys are, you know, it's paid for. The whole media system is a money-making machine, you know, through the advertising. This thing has no commercials. It's a great channel. You can get educated. It's awesome.
Well, I'm just pointing out that when they're talking about, you know, things that the U.S. has done wrong or things happening in Brazil or somewhere else in the world, in the U.K., but when it comes to, you know, messed up stories happening inside Russia, well, RT doesn't do such a good job covering those stories.
Actually, it does. But anyway, you can try and observe it yourself. But the main reason I wanted to call in is I thought, you know, if I were at that county council meeting, what I would want to say in my 3 minutes. Am I still on?
You sure are.
I would just like to say that, well, first of all, it'd be really cool if I could play David Suzuki an excerpt from him speaking once on Democracy Now! And then follow it up with that song AI by Sudden Rush. But since I can't really play that over the phone, I'll summarize.
All right.
We must change the way we believe. We're driven by an idea that nature is all there for us to exploit and use up. Our belief and values affect how we look at the world and what we think about it. The paradigm we now exist within is driven by the sense that it's all here for us to use up, to eat all the fish, to, you know, it's for us to just, you know,
to consume,
nature. We need to shift that, you know, and I think that comes a lot from even a Christian understanding. Oh, we're just going to die and go to heaven. It'll all be okay, you know. But it's not. This is our mother. We need to shift that to a better understanding that we are part of a vast web of interconnected species, and that is the biosphere, the zone of earth, air, water, and land, where all life exists, is a very thin layer around the planet. Carl Sagan told us, if we shrink the earth to the size of a basketball, the biosphere, the zone of air, water, and land, where all life exists, would be thinner than a layer of saran wrap. And that is our home. But it's also the home to 30 million other species that keep the planet habitable.
Amen to that.
If we don't begin to see that we're utterly embedded in the natural world and dependent on nature, not technology, not economics, not science, we are dependent on Mother Nature for our very well-being and survival. If we don't see that, then our priorities will continue to be driven by man-made constraints like national borders, economies, corporations, markets. Those are all human-created things. They shouldn't dominate the way we live. It should be the biosphere.
Now, if this was your testimony that you were giving to council, at some point someone would come in and interrupt you and say, I'm sorry, that's all the time you have left.
My 3 minutes is up for reals.
No, I'm just making that joke. but
that is.
But that is what would happen. And someone say, well, could you please summarize? Go to your summary sentence, please.
Okay. All right. Do you want me to, though?
Sure. If you want to play along.
Right. Well, I am
one sentence.
Done.
Okay.
And the leaders in that should be the indigenous people.
Why do you feel that way?
I feel like the true indigenous people are the ones that see the earth is truly our mother. Like, there's these little Mimas, I think they're called, and they live deep in the jungle somewhere in South America, and they chew coca leaf, actually, and they climb around and they pray, and their little society of living sustainably is keeping the earth intact in their little spiritual realm that they live in. Those are the indigenous leaders. The people of Kauai, the Hawaiians that I know, love this earth, and they would never want to kill the earth, ever. You know, it is sad that, you know, some of them have been hired in this company and they don't, and they have forgotten. I mean, some people litter and they're locals and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think that the most indigenous people, I have Cherokee Indian blood. I think that most Cherokee, you know, people that have some kind of indigenous seed in them will treat the earth as our mother. And we don't treat the mother the way we treat the planet or the biosphere today. We must fundamentally change. Start to understand that we are animals. When I tell people that across the United States, people get upset and say, don't call my kid an animal, we're human beings. You see, we don't even want to accept our biological nature, but as animals, our absolutely highest need for survival and well-being is clean air, clean water, clean soil that gives us our food and energy from the sun that plants use and capture by photosynthesis.
Sure. Well, we're not machines, so we got to be something. If we're not robots, if we're not machines.
That's what we're dependent on. So how can we, claiming to be intelligent, use air, water, and soil as a garbage can for our wastes and the most toxic chemicals ever known on the planet, as if somehow that's not going to have its consequences?
Well, those are very good observations.
We are biological creatures, then our highest priorities become absolutely clear. We've got to stop all release of any kind of human-created material into our surroundings until we can learn to recycle that and mimic nature in how we create and then degrade those things. And I know you two understand me because you're very intelligent guys, and it's a wonderful show.
Well, I thank you for your testimony.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You know, we have the nicest and most intelligent listeners.
We do.
We're so blessed.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Thanks. A couple quick comments.
Did you know that Mr. Putin's dad was the head chef de cuisine to Stalin?
I did not know that.
Yes, and so I guess that's where maybe Putin picked up his little leadership hints, right?
Could be.
From Stalin?
Like Stalin said, one man's death is a tragedy, a million is just a number.
And yeah, he said a bunch of stuff, that Stalin guy.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Like his mother said, listen, Joe, you know, if you had entered the church, you'd be a bishop by now. This is when he was running Russia, right? So his mother was a little bit, she didn't understand he was the top dog, right? But I would say, amen.
Well, you know why? It's because he just went around calling himself the secretary, the general secretary, right?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, most Americans don't understand that the Russians lost about 27 million people in World War II.
I think it was more like 35 million.
Anyway, they had so many. He killed off all his best generals even before World War II because he was such a conspiracy nut.
Who did? Stalin?
Stalin, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, it was messy, very messy.
It was obviously a nut job.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't really dig his kind of like macho. Every time I see that clown walking around strutting his stuff, like, I want to say, give it up, dude. But anyway, I want to say.
Are you talking about Putin now?
Yeah, I think you and Dave are in different camps. I think Dave has a certain admiration for Putin's machismo.
Well, I mean,
his actions.
I think it's all right for him to enjoy his masculinity. There's nothing wrong with that. But I want to see him walking on a stage. You know, he's like always like swaggering, like it just makes me ill. It's not that our leadership doesn't make me ill, which it extremely does. And I wish when you refer to BP, you would use the real name, which is British Petroleum.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you for that point.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Aloha.
We got one more call. Then we're going to move on to another topic here. So hold the call.
Yeah, this is our last.
Few more minutes.
This is our last call for a little while.
Okay. Hello?
Aloha, caller.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Comment about that lady. I liked what she said. I believe in what she said because I know that as a native Hawaiian, we've done this for the longest time. We traced our heritage. We go all the way back to the time Christ was walking the earth.
Sure, more than 1,000 years ago.
And we believe that we're all in a canoe and in our seat is what we pass on to our children and our family. Everything we need on our canoe seat is there for us to survive on and also to pass it on. What makes us angry is that when that guy in the front of us wants to take over my seat after he gets through ruining his seat. Us Hawaiians, we have been self-sufficient for the longest time, longer than anyone else. And that lady, she kind of made me angry when she said, let's go back to South America. Those people, hey, you live here in Hawaii. What's wrong with us Hawaiians? We've been doing this since time immemorial when you folks were still hugging the coastline of the Mediterranean Sea and would not venture out into the Atlantic Ocean because of fear of falling off.
Yeah, falling off the edge of the world. What a silly idea.
Yeah, and for me, I'll just get back to that lady's point. Lady, you live here in Hawaii. Us Hawaiian people, when we get together, their topic of discussion is always Malama Aina. The land is most important to us.
Now,
GMO.
What does Malama Aina mean for those who don't understand Malama Aina?
Taking care of the land, most simply put. Taking care of it, making sure that you pass it on. This is what I'm doing in my own little piece of property. Because I have 2 chickens, 2 goats, and I move them around from place to place. And the little crap that they make, I use that to refertilize my area. That's what I'm doing when I'm Malama the Aina.
Smart.
And then we've been doing this since time immemorial. Our taro system is set up so that you have 4 or 5 taro fields in one area. And the water feeds from one to the next to the next. And by the time it gets down to the last one, it's almost all used up. Nothing goes to waste. Nothing like what they're doing with the agribusiness here on the Kikaha side of the world, where they're taking all the land that used to, all the water that used to go to sugarcane, and they're dumping 80% of it into somebody's valley, and they want to control the land, the water, and they want to control the water so they can control what our destinies are. Everybody seems to need to wake up, people. The agribusinesses are fooling with us. And for all of you people who went to 2491, you folks made one simple mistake. I was a second person on, and I said, my name is Anthony Aguiar, and I support Bill 2491. Everybody else came on, they bleed all over the place, but nobody said they support 2491. I like this, I like that. You gotta support Bill 2491. Because when I stuck around, I listened to those people who opposed Bill 2491. They said it in the very beginning, I oppose. They've been well rehearsed. You have to get better at what you're doing. Otherwise, you folks are going to lose everything, and along with everything goes everything.
Well, those are words to the wise caller. Thank you for calling in and sharing that view.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hey, aloha. We're going to change topics, shift gears here a little bit. Not entirely, though, because this last caller was talking about Malama Aina, caring for the land, you know, taking care of the land so that it has the qualities that you need to survive today and tomorrow and for future generations. And that's what we'll be spending the next hour talking with Jennifer Luck from the Hawaiian HILT, H-I-L-T, Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. And so thank you very much for coming in and being a guest with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and really appreciate the opportunity to be here and to talk a little bit about the work that we do and some of the projects that we're working on here on Kauai. So if it's okay, I'll just start with a quick review of kind of the land trust and how we operate.
Well, yeah. I mean, the quote here I have from you says that we are protecting the places that sustain us for the present and future generations. And so maybe we can go into some examples of just exactly that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, people aren't always so familiar with land trust exactly. And it can be, because of the term land trust, it can be a bit confusing. So I want to make sure and be really clear. The Hawaiian Islands Land Trust is a private nonprofit organization. So we operate just like any other private nonprofit organization. We rely on the generosity of donors, and we subsist on grants from private foundations and from government agencies. We're governed by a board of directors. We are a statewide organization. We currently protect over 17,000 acres statewide, about 17,500 acres.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and we were formed in January 2011, actually, out of the merger of four existing land trusts.
I was going to say there was the Kauai Island Land Trust and Maui Island Land Trust, and you guys all merged somehow.
We did, yeah.
What,
so,
what was the advantage in that?
Well, actually, it was the Kauai Public Land Trust here on Kauai, of which I was executive director, the Maui Coastal Land Trust, the Oahu Land Trust, and the Hawaii Island Land Trust that all merged in January of 2011. The thinking behind that was basically all the land trusts began meeting in 2009 to explore possibilities of working together, how they could work more professionally and more efficiently, essentially to protect more land. You know, it's a challenge to try and purchase land in Hawaii for a number of reasons. Mostly because of the expense.
Sure, land here is very expensive.
Very expensive, right? We're not in Montana. It's several million dollars for small parcels. So, you know, it was a really smart idea to get together and start to talk about how can we do this better? How can we be the best possible at our job and to protect the land that really needs to be protected and to be efficient at it, to move more quickly when necessary? And so out of that two-year-long conversation came the idea to merge all the four largest land trusts into one, so we could combine efforts and attract larger pots of funding and have more resources at our disposal, staff expertise, attract a more powerful board of directors that could then introduce us to the type of people that could support our cause, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it was a decision that was made basically so that we could protect more land statewide. And we've been in operation now as the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust for a little over 2 years, and things are going really well. We've closed on a couple of projects. We're getting ready to acquire an additional 12.2 acres down at Kihili Beach here on Kauai, and we already protect several hundred acres on the North Shore.
Is that one in Kilauea? Is that bit of land, the sand dunes behind the beach?
Right, yes, exactly.
Where they've been cutting down the trees to improve the view?
Somebody has,
Somebody, we don't know who,
but they've been a couple years.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who's doing it. Though.
About a year and a half ago, there were some trees cut down, not for firewood, because the trees were literally just cut and left, so it wasn't like somebody was having a big bonfire and needed to cut down the trees for that. But they were cut down, and so we went to press with it, just basically to make people aware, to bring some public attention to the issue in the hopes that it would stop, because there were also some trees being poisoned, diesel and whatnot poured on the trunks, and it stopped, which is great. Nothing's happened since, so that's really wonderful. We have signs up if you go down there with my cell phone number on them. So if people do see somebody doing something that's suspicious, they can call us and let us know. And really, you know, the community really takes such wonderful care of that place. And there are a lot of people that go down every single day. And it was because of them that we found out that this was going on.
In the first place.
In the first place. Sure, I try and go down regularly, but I'm not there every day like some people are. And so I got calls saying, you know, I'm walking my dog and there's a strange smell from these trees. And I can see something's been poured and they're starting to die off. And so, you know, I want to thank the community for being so vigilant and taking the time to contact us. That was great.
Well, what are some other examples of some a more mature land trust protection that you guys have accomplished?
On Maui, we have a 277-acre refuge at Waihe'e. We've owned that for several years, probably 10, 12 years now. And it's a really wonderful example of the type of work a land trust can do when it owns property in fee. It's a large property. Again, it's 277 acres. And we've done the staff on Maui in particular, Scott Fisher, who's our director of conservation, and James Crow, our director of stewardship, have done a phenomenal job of restoring that property. We have they've restored a lot of the native plant species. They're doing taro lo'i there now. They give tours several times a month. They have hundreds of school kids that go down there and work and volunteer their time. And so in my mind, we have a lot of really spectacular properties on Kauai, but kind of the best example for us right now is probably that refuge of what can be done, you know, the really wonderful work that the Land Trust can do.
Well, the reason that we invited you on here today is to talk about a future potential project, and that is the old cocoa palm site.
Yes.
It's sat there now for over 20 years after Aniki pounded it, and it's just been an empty shell for the last, you know, 20-plus years. People drive by. You can see that virtually nothing has happened with it. For years and years and years, the property kept getting sold to different parties who claim to have some plan to restore it into a hotel, but decades have gone by now and nothing's happened. And so where are we with that process now?
Right. So several years ago, well, let me begin by saying that typically the land trust works on projects that are brought to it by the community. So we very much look to the community, the local community on that particular island, to tell us what they want to see protected. Where can the land trust be of service? Because a lot of times the local community has already started an effort to protect a place that is special to them, a place important in their heart, a place that sustains them. And so usually the way that we operate is the community will approach the land trust at some point when it's appropriate and say, can you come and step in? Can you help us protect this property either through fee simple ownership, raise money to buy it in a very traditional way, or place a conservation easement on it, which is essentially a development restriction on the property.
And that's something that the existing property owner would agree to.
Right. The existing property owner would continue to own the property. It's just that they would choose to retire the development rights on the property. So it's essentially stay in open space. And so several years ago, before the merger, the land trust was approached by a group of community and civic leaders that were interested in trying to do something with the cocoa palms. They were tired, like everybody else, I think, of driving by that place day after day after day after day and seeing nothing change.
Well, and then, you think of all the possibility and the potential of what could be there.
Right.
And you start getting excited and you're like, well, let's, what do we need to do to make that start happening? And so I guess, getting the land trust involved is a step in that direction.
Correct. So they approached the land trust to see if the land trust would be interested in working with them and trying to create a solution, and, you know, possibly owning the property or helping to raise the money to acquire it. And the land trust at that time, the Kauai Public Land Trust, led by Bill Chase and Gary Blake, said that they would. And I was, of course, supportive of it as well. And so we began to talk about what the options would be on this property. It's a hugely complex project. You know, what's appropriate there? What would work best considering the population growth over the last 21 years? You know, the traffic issues, all of that. And essentially what that group, the Friends of Cocoa Palms, is what they eventually decided to name themselves, and they're still in existence and working with the Land Trust today.
A very friendly and nice name.
It is a friendly and nice name, yeah, absolutely. So they decided that really what would be best, rather than them determining what's best for the community, is to give the community the time and the space and the opportunity to make that determination for themselves.
And so what does that look like? Because that's kind of, that's big.
Right.
That's grappling. It's a lot of voices are all trying to speak at the same time.
So essentially what we decided is that, and part of the rationale behind that too is that there needs to be a plan in place in order to attract the type of funding, and we're talking about millions of dollars, necessary to acquire the property, clean it up, do any additional construction work that needs to be done.
Or demolition,
right,
sure.
Exactly. You need to have a really well thought out plan in place. And so we decided to apply for some grant money to create that plan, to do a feasibility study on the property to see what could feasibly be done there, what would make sense there, to give the community that time and space to go through that planning process. And that would look like essentially, probably a combination between being proactive and reaching out to the community, maybe having stations, various parts of the island where people could come and fill out a survey and put in their 2 cents of what they think would work there, answer some questions, talk to myself, other volunteers, and then hold community meetings as well that would be facilitated by a professional. And
is that something that you and the Land Trust have done before? This is more of a much more of a public involvement,
right,
kind of a thing. That's maybe a different flavor than you've done before.
Yeah, the grants, there's a lot of components. There's the feasibility study, the community input process, the creation of the plan that could then be taken to potential funders. And so in order to accomplish those three things, we needed funding to do that, to even begin this process. So we applied to the state for a grant in aid and received that grant in aid for $270,000.
What is a grant in aid?
It's basically, it's a capital improvement grant from the state, essentially. So it's a, you know, you apply for it like you would any other grant. You just apply through your local elected official, Senator Cochi. We were very lucky, was incredibly supportive of this project and was instrumental in securing the money, as was Gary Hoosier. And so we received that grant in aid, we don't have the money, but we've been approved for the grant in aid. And that'll give us the money to hire the professionals that will allow us to accomplish those three goals. So to hire engineers, appraisers, those type of folks to help with the feasibility study, to hire facilitators and companies that are very practiced in leading the community through processes like this that are complex and dealing with something that's emotionally very important to a lot of people.
Sure.
And then they'll also help draft the plan in the end. And the Land Trust essentially will serve, you know, we're happy to serve as a catalyst. We're the recipient of the money because we're a nonprofit. And then in the end can also help facilitate the acquisition of the property as well, if that's the road that we decide to take.
How is that, big is that property then, anyway? How many acres?
It's, so it appears larger than it actually is on paper. Mm. There's 12 acres resort zoned in the front where all the hotels are. There's 17 acres of leased land from the state. That 17 acres is the Coconut Grove.
That's kind of behind it.
It's a little bit over 17 acres. And so there's a long-term lease with the state, like 40 years, something like that, that's been held on that Coconut Grove for a very long time. So that kind of comes with the property. And then there's an additional chunk of land, about 20 acres or so, behind that's zoned open and conservation. So
that's like 60 acres all told?
Right, including the, if you include the about 50 or so, if you include the leased land from the state.
So what sort of options are being discussed at this point there? I mean, still want to put a hotel in there and with a cultural center or just a cultural center park? Well, or what's the options at this point?
Well, the options are not being discussed in a lot of detail at this point because a feasibility study needs to be done first. So we need to determine, what would work there, what's financially feasible there. And of course, the Land Trust, our mission is to protect places that sustain us. So we are bound by our mission to essentially protect open space. So of course, you know, the Land Trust would want to see some portion of it be protected in open space. What level of protection, whether it was fee simple or conservation easement, remains to be determined. But, you know, we really don't want to begin to say what we feel would be appropriate there. We really feel strongly, and when I say we, I mean the Land Trust and the Friends of Cocoa Palms feel very strongly that once the feasibility study is done, once we know, you know, if any of those buildings can be salvaged from a historic perspective, once we've thought about all the varying issues, traffic and population and sea level rise and all of those things, and then that information can be presented to the public so that they can go through an informed process. But ultimately, you know, the community should really be the ones making the plan. And we, the Friends
of... So you're in a tricky position where the community has to lead, but the opportunity for the community to input hasn't happened yet. So we can't really say what it is we're trying to do. So it's a little bit nebulous.
It is. It's just that we're still in the very much beginning stages. We haven't actually started the community input process yet, or we haven't received the money yet. So we're still kind of really early on in the process. And
so without getting the cart before the horse, I guess, right. We don't want to do that.
Right.
Where are we? What does the big picture look like in terms of the timeline for all this stuff?
So right now, the governor is very supportive of releasing the funds, which is excellent. That's definitely a necessity. So we have to, the funds will be released by the governor, and then they'll flow through the county of Kauai and ultimately to the Land Trust. The grant and aid, the way they work, is you have to pass the funds through either a state agency or local government agency, and we chose to go through the county because we felt they would be supportive. Of course, the county council passed unanimously the resolution in support of our application, which was great. So the funds would be released from the state, go through to the county, and then ultimately to the Land Trust. And that could take a couple months. And then once we have the funds in place, we'll begin the feasibility study, which take another few months, and the community input process after that.
Let's hold that for just a moment. We're going to take care of some station business, and we'll get right back to the big picture timeline.
Sounds
okay.
Good.
Okay, just after 5 o'clock, and we need to take a quick break and thank some of our underwriters.
You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Haleiwa.
Children exposed to pesticides during critical growing years face health issues such as higher incidences of respiratory problems, autism, brain cancer, and these are just the tip of the iceberg. We all suffer from the use of pesticides in our food, our air, water, and our aina. Let's live organic. It's intelligent and safe.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural, biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama Aina, Hawaii Lifestyle.
Maybe not rolling.
And mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai
exactly.
Community Radio.
Yeah, we'll probably need to come on again.
Hey, we've got a caller. Hopefully they have a question here of Jennifer Luck, who from the Hawaiian Island Land Trust. Is that what it is?
Hawaiian Islands Land Trust.
Yeah, well, if they don't, we'll just hang up on them. Go ahead, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. There we go. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're talking with Jennifer Luck from the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust about future possibilities for the Cocoa Palms property. How are you doing today?
Aloha. This is Larry Rivera. I'm elated. I was down there today. We took pictures. The men are working on it. And I am just so happy. This is Larry Rivera. And I've been on your station several times.
Oh, yeah, we know who you are. More than several.
I'm not aware of that. Everybody knows me. But anyway, I am just elated. What song are you playing? I'm trying to find your station.
91.9.
Oh, hello?
91.9. Can you hear me?
Oh, wait. Something's wrong here. Hello?
Hello, Larry.
Yeah, tune in on 91.9.
Right, and we're not playing any music at all right now. We're talking with you.
Oh, you're talking with me.
Yeah, you're live on the air.
Yeah, oh, wow, that's terrific. I am so happy because 90% of the local people, that especially those work there, would love Cocoa Palm back again for 400 jobs. You know, Sears is closing and everything. We need the jobs, so I'm so happy that something is happening there. I was just elated when I passed the property today, and they called me in and took pictures, and I met the owner, and he loves me, whatever I do. Mm-hmm. So, and he loves all the people. He's trying to do their best. So God bless them, and God bless you guys to play the wonderful music of Kauai.
Okay, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Larry, you still there?
Yes.
What would you like to see happen to that property?
I want to put back just the way it was. And if necessary, on the far end, they could add a few more rooms so that it'll be more feasible for them, because you need revenue. But it would be a hotel and a cultural center, which it was. We did a lot of cultural things, from the Deborah Capulli, the torch lighting, a lot of hotels even copied us. And all the Hawaiian was there. So there was a lot of Hawaiian culture. A lot of Hawaiian people that were born here, that were with Mrs. Guslander, who taught us how to do it the right way. So we had hotel and cultural where both would support each other, because one by itself would not do it. So a hotel and a cultural center in the Grove would really, really be the trick.
So, Larry, did you used to play music there?
Is that a trick question?
Silly question.
Silly question.
I worked there 62 years come September 14th.
62 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you have any stories?
Yesterday I had a Blue Hawaii wedding there. It was gorgeous. And the people from England, the Candons, they're staying at this Kauai Beach Resort, and they said they never expected to be that beautiful beyond their dreams. They were all from England. And the wedding, renewal was so beautiful. And then in the morning, I address the Roberts tourists that come in there. And I tell them about me and Elvis and Bing Crosby, and how I taught Bing Crosby to sing a song called Love and Aloha. It's on the internet. You can find it. From Elvis to Bing to Frank to Myron Florin to Patti Page. Patti Page and Elvis sang background vocals with me. I wouldn't let him sing the lead. And we were the best of friends and had a great time. He even took me to Memphis, all expense paid, my wife and I, to address his fans of our friendship together in beautiful Coco Palm. He loved Coco Palm just the way it was.
Wow, yeah. That's great.
Larry, I'd love to hear a little bit from you about, and thank you so much for calling, but a little from you more about what made Grace Guslander so special, and maybe some of the things that she did, the special touches that she brought to that place, because it really, you know, I wasn't here then, obviously, but it really does seem like she was a truly amazing woman and created such a beautiful...
Oh, yes. Everybody learned from her.
Right.
She was the number one queen of Kauai. And, in fact, I have so many stories that will be coming out in my book called Inherit the Palms that Carol Courtney and I are working on. I was hoping to get it ready for my 83 birthday, September 14th, but we're doing it at the museum, a big fundraiser there on my birthday, September 14th, food and show and everything. So Grace Guslander, I even wrote a song for her. It's on one of my CDs called Grace of the Islands. Mm. And my latest song is Beautiful Coco Palm, Shining in the Sun. Beautiful Coco Palm, where my heart belongs. Beautiful Coco Palm, it's so heavenly. Beautiful Coco Palm, where I want to be. Drums beating in the night, torches lighting the way. Ukuleles strumming for you where the palm trees sway. Memories still live on. Once again it's born. Aloha is the spirit of beautiful Coco Palm. That's the latest song I wrote.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you so much for letting me talk this long. I'm in my patio and we're having host to some visitors from the mainland. I'm a one-man visitor bureau.
Well, yeah, and you're also a living legend, so thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, I was born in Kika'a, Kauai. I'm born and raised here, six generations, have six children, 17 grand and 18 great. And their names are, you have to come to my show for that.
All right, we don't have time anyway.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, well, that's one of the things that we're really blessed by is the continuity and the cultural memory here on the island. We have, you know, people like Larry Rivera who performed for over 60 years at Cocoa Palms.
Absolutely. And, you know, David Penhollow and people like that that have done such a phenomenal job of recording the history and the special time in that place's history when Grace Gustlander was running the hotel. I mean, you can just hear it in Larry's voice, the love and aloha that he still has for her. That's an amazing gift to be able to create that kind of loyalty among people. And it really does seem like she was a truly incredible woman that was able to run a hotel, but almost make it feel like a family and a home to not only the people that work there, but the people that visited there as well. And that's a gift. That's unusual, especially these days. So it's so different how hotels are developed and run these days. They're very corporate, typically. And so you don't get that kind of personal touch that she was able to give when she was running the hotel.
Do we have another caller calling back?
No, they hung up there. But the phone lines are open, 826-7771, if you have any question or want to talk about Cocoa Palms.
So we're talking about the timelines of where we are in terms of the feasibility studies, going through the structures there and finding out what remains. But I think the thing that everybody wants to find out about is when does the public get to have some input into, you know, sharing their piece of the vision of what can happen in the future.
Right.
I mean, we just heard from Larry Rivera, who obviously has a rich tradition and rich history, personal history with the Cocoa Palms. But Cocoa Palms was only there for a short period of time in the bigger picture. You know, 1,000 years ago, there was no Cocoa Palms there, but it was the Wailua Nui Ahoano, the great and sacred Wailua. So we have a We have almost 2,000 years of history to try and
right. It was
put into one place.
Yeah, Deborah Capule. And,
sure.
And so there's certainly a very rich history predating the Grace Gustlander years. Grace Gustlander years is the most recent, and so I think that's
the freshest.
The freshest, and there's still, you know, a lot of people that worked for her and with her, and so it's a very new memory to them and or a fresh memory in their minds, and still a lot of loyalty and ties to that time. But the significance of that site, and I think from the land trust perspective, because of we protect a variety of places that are recreationally significant, so beach parks and that type of stuff, ensuring access to beaches, agricultural lands that for endangered species habitat and that type of thing, but also culturally significant lands. And so for us, you know, our passions were awakened for this project because of the pre-Gustlander years, really, you know, the pre-contact years and the significance of that place, the Wailua River mouth and home to Deborah Capule, and even far before that, the heiau that
are
there.
You have the heiaus, Kiniakala.
Right. And so I think, exactly. And so I think it's, you know, when paying tribute to that place and thinking about what's most appropriate there. And in an ideal world, you really want to pay tribute not only to the Grace Gustlander years, but all of that amazing history that came far before that, and it made it almost even more significant. So,
well, how many heiau are there that are in the immediate vicinity? There's the Kukui, the fishing heiau, which is a little bit to the north on the coast. There's the
right,
City of Refuge. There's Hikiniakala.
Yeah, there's six. I think there's, and I could be wrong, so if I'm wrong, somebody can call in and correct me, but I think there's six or seven heiau.
There's the Birthstone,
there's
the Bellstone, there's the heiau that's up on the Kuamo'o.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just super, super dense with all kinds of cultural traditions.
Right, coming and down the Wailua River,
sure.
Not just on the Cocoa Palms property, of course, but coming down the Wailua River and the Wailua River mouth area. So, you know, and we've, as far as how people can kind of get involved now, we're always looking for volunteers. I will happily give my contact information on the show when time's appropriate, or I can do it now. But so that people can call me or email me with their ideas and their thoughts and ways that they can contribute. The outpouring of support since the article came out initially about the grant and aid in the Garden Island has been tremendous. A lot of people have expressed an interest in getting involved and talking to us about what they'd like to see happen there.
Well, let's take a few more calls from callers, and then we'll continue on.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? With a name like Grace, how could you go wrong? You know, one thing, I only went to the Cocoa Palms once, and one thing that I really admired was the koi fish and swimming right by where you would eat. There was a big koi pond. and the fish, the beautiful fish. I don't know if it's still there. But aside from, I think, Hawaii in its entirety should be a cultural center. I heard on a show on KKCR a month or so ago that this musician from Honolulu was reminiscing about the old days, and he said one reason why all the hotels were booked and filled was because the tourists had a real relationship with all the musicians and the people. They were like family. They wanted to come back, not just to see beautiful Hawaii, but to see their old friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also just on the humorous side, someone told me that Elvis Presley is still alive and well, living on Niihau.
Oh.
And he's still recording.
I haven't heard that one before. That's great. Well, it would be a good place to hide out if you were looking for somewhere where you wouldn't be seen out of the public eye. Niihau is certainly one of them.
Yeah. Okay, we have another call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, I was just wondering, there's another process that's come up recently that the way to do public input, and that's the Ahamoku Council. The bill that was passed by the governor, it came from the Aha Kiole system, and there is going to be a meeting on Kauai on August the 24th at Kauai Community College from 1 to 5 p.m. to explain how the process works. Each moku on the island has a representative for it, and actually our Puna moku, which has Wailua, has two representatives. And the representative for your area is Puanani Rogers. And they're going to talk about the process. The Ahamoku Council has been set up to advise BLNR, which is the board that directs the Department of Land and Natural Resources, DLNR. And they have a form that they're going to be offering to the mokus and to each aqua to bring forward issues that are of importance to each of the watershed councils. And this might be a really nice forum to use to try and get some information about what people living in that Apukua'a would like to have happen with the cocoa palm.
That's a great idea. Thank you. Do you know what time it is on August 24th?
It's from 1 to 5 o'clock, and it's going to be at Kauai Community College in the Office of Continuing Education and Training, Room 106.
Great. Thank you so much. I think that's a really wonderful idea, and I'll try and go to that if possible, because it sounds like it would be a worthwhile afternoon to learn more about that process.
I think it would, and I think that to empower this group would be a really good idea for a lot of the issues that we have on our island.
You're talking about the Ahumoku Councils, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity. Since that's a relatively new organization, they can begin to come into their own and, you know, network and create connections like that.
And it's up to all of us to participate, so I'm putting the word out. So mahalo, you guys. Thank you. Aloha.
All right, aloha. And do we have another caller?
Not right now, but the phone lines are open, 826-7771.
So that's one opportunity or one example of ways to get in touch with the community. What are some other ideas that you guys have, and when do you think that we'll start in a more formal fashion with that? What can we look forward to?
I think more than likely it's going to be several months before we start the community process, just because we have to actually get the money, which we're hoping to do relatively quickly because of the levels of support we have, both at the state level with the governor and then at the local level with the council. And, you know, we hope Mayor Carvalho is supportive as well. And so we're hoping to get that money quickly, and then a couple months for feasibility study, the work that the land trust has to do, our due diligence process, which would inform the community process. So I would say, you know, 6 to 8 months, somewhere around there. And that's an estimation. So, you know, at this point, I'm doing the best I can to give a realistic picture for people so that there's not a lot of frustration or disappointment in the process at the outset. But this is our first time going through this process, so it's a little bit of an unknown right now.
Well, we're making it up as we go. Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But it sounds like from what you said that sometime next year, maybe February, March, early spring.
Springtime. Mm-hmm.
That this large project will begin to coalesce and we'll begin to see some shape and form.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people are very excited about that, because there are so many things that, you know, sometimes are perceived as problems on the island. you know, like this whole big debate with the GMO bill with 2491. You've got a lot of division in the community. Some people are for it. Some people are concerned about their jobs. Some people are concerned about the poisoning of the land and the INA. And they're motivated to try and do something about it, but it's a negative motivation. Well, that's not the case here. This is a very positive project that I think a lot of people inside their hearts would feel very excited and passionate to help move forward in some way.
Right. And I think it's you know, it sat empty, vacant. Nothing has happened there for more than 20 years. The private developers, there's been multiple private developers that have had the opportunity to do something, to restore that to hotel, and it hasn't happened. It hasn't been able to be accomplished. And I think at least in part because from a private benefit perspective, if you're looking at trying to rebuild that hotel and make money off of it, it's a very difficult venture. But we're approaching it from a different side. We're looking at it from the public benefit perspective. So
which is vast,
right? And so I think, you know, I think really our path, our approach could possibly be finally the viable approach for this place, and it could create a really amazing gathering place, whatever that looks like. For the community, and it could set a standard statewide and nationwide of what a community, what an involved, active, impassioned, intelligent community can do when they come together.
Yeah, see, that's exciting, and that's there's nothing to fight against there. It's all positive. Aloha, caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're talking about Wailua Nui Ahoano and the Hawaiian Cultural Center that may one day come to be.
Well, what just got my attention was that the previous caller talked about a meeting on August 24th, and your guest said, and what time is that meeting? Well, I just want to let everybody know that they can find out now if you send your information not only here to KKCR like people do all the time, but the Garden Island newspaper has now instituted the daily calendar again. And
okay.
So you can send your information in for your meetings and events and fundraisers and so forth to the Garden Island, which we hadn't been able to do for a couple of years. So it's calendar@thegardenisland.com. So if you have a meeting, send it there.
That's good to know. Thank you. Thank you, caller.
You're welcome.
That'll be really, thank you for calling in and mentioning that, because that'll be really helpful once we actually do get the community process up and going, just knowing that we can email it directly and it'll get advertised so people are very clear about when those meetings are happening.
We're so blessed here at Out of the Box on KKCR because we don't have all the answers, but we have listeners who do. So,
right, caller, are you there?
I'm here.
You're on the air.
I was just calling to say, as far as cocoa palms and, you know, the thing in Hanalei and all the GMO and, you know, all the different problems that, and confusion that we have in our community, you know, I just wanted to say that, you know, when you move here to Kauai, you're in a different world. Oh, you've left the mainland and you've come here. And one thing I really don't understand is that why the people who were born here and raised here, who are pretty much the minority, I believe that they should have 50% of the vote, regardless of how many people come here from the mainland.
Oh, it's just so that the place never gets overwashed.
Just so the people who lived here and the local culture, which is getting thrown out by the inundation of people from the mainland, which is me included, you know, I moved here, you moved here. You know, we should have the people who live here have 50% of the vote. And I think that would give a lot of the people in Hawaii, the Hawaiians, even if they're white, you know, but they grew up here for the fishing rights, for the land rights, for things like that. I just think it would be more beneficial to the island. And then when people move here, they say, hey, you know what, we are still in the minority. Even though we're 70% of the population, we're in the minority. And we actually do have to try and fit in. We can't just go and change everything.
Well, it's my hope and dream that not too many years from now, when we have a Hawaiian Cultural Center set up at the old Cocoa Palm site, that there will be classes there that for newcomers to come here who've decided to move here to learn about this place where they are and to learn about Kauai and how it used to be and how it came to be, so they can have a better understanding and help enrich the future. I just don't think
that the people in from the mainland, like you, Jonathan, and myself, I just don't think that we have as much right to have opinions on the future of this island. We don't have enough right to have an opinion as far as, there's two of us against, a third of them, because they're getting washed out by the taxes, by the land rights, by all kinds of different things.
The cost of living and not being able to afford to stay there. Sure.
And you know what? The people who have lived here their whole lives, even the Filipinos and the Japanese who've been here forever, living in Keikaha and Waimea and North Shore and, East Side and everything, they don't have enough of a voice anymore. They're so overrun by us. It's just ridiculous. They don't even want to vote. I think they should have half of the rights to vote. I think it should be, if you're born and raised here, then you have half of the vote. And I think it would bring a lot more people out to stand up and vote. And I think they would make the right decisions, more than we would.
All right, well, it's an interesting idea. I got another call then. Thanks for the call.
All right. Hey, I haven't been listening to your show, so I really don't know what's been said.
Oh, okay, well, thank you, see you later.
Oh, damn.
So you should probably call back the on-air line.
Okay, well, I just thought I don't know if people have called and told you that construction started on Cocoa Palms today.
Yeah, actually, we had Larry Rivera called in and gave us the
heads
up on that.
Oh, that's good. Okay, I'm glad Larry did that.
So was that demolition that started or new construction? Because there's no permits that have been pulled for new construction. The permits were revoked. So if they're cleaning up the site, then that's one thing. That's great news.
Well, anyway, I won't go into that. I'll just tell you, we had the blessing ceremony this morning, and then got a crew in here, and they're starting to do their thing. Putting up the construction screens.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. You bet. Take care.
So if I could, I wanted to talk a little bit, because I know that not this last caller was talking about it, what sounds like some cleanup work being done or demolition work being done by the current owner, which would be great. But rather, the caller before that, who I think expressed a real desire to maybe change things and undo a little bit of the tide of development that's happening here on the island that they see. And so I just want to take an opportunity to encourage people that have those similar feelings and that want to try and do something to slow the tide of development, to try and take things back to how they were and protect those special places, to consider getting involved with the Land Trust. We have a website. It's www.hilt.org. And you can contact me directly at 755-5707. That's my cell phone number. That comes directly to me. If you're interested in getting involved and, if it's not the Land Trust, there are other great organizations. Waipa Foundation is doing really amazing work on the North Shore. And I know there's a number of really incredible nonprofits around the island that are, Hanalei Watershed Hui, again, here on the North Shore. But
have you seen the large ki'i down in Po'ipu that were just erected?
No, I have not seen
that. Oh, yeah, that's for Kane Iola Uma.
Right, and Kane Iola Uma is an amazing 11-acre cultural complex down on
the south side. That's mind-blowing, if you ever walked through there before.
Behind Brennecke's, believe it or not. You would never know it was there. And there's a hui down there led by Rupert Rowe that have, for years, been laboring and clearing that place by hand just as a labor of love, and they are incredible and always looking for volunteers to help out.
And the next volunteer opportunity for that is going to be on Sunday the 18th. August. So if you want to come up and bring some gloves and a hat and some boots and some water, and you'll get put right to work, and it'll feel real good.
Yeah, and even if you can't make that, I strongly encourage you. I know they have a website. I think it's huikaneolouma.org, but you could probably Google it. It's an amazing place. It will give you chicken skin if you go and get a tour, especially from Rupert, if you're lucky enough.
But there's
a lot of really great organizations doing really good work on the island, and I would strongly encourage people to support them. The Land Trust has a membership program. Our membership start at $15 if you're under the age of 21, and $25 and $50, and it goes up from there. But we really encourage people to get involved, to come out and volunteer on beach cleanups. Of course, we're nonprofits, and all nonprofits rely on the generosity of people, not only through volunteering their time, but giving of their money. And so I just would really encourage people to take some of that energy and maybe some of that frustration and funnel it into a positive place. And there's a lot of nonprofits that could use some help.
What's your contact info as far as email goes?
Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, at hilt.org.
That's H-I-L-T.org.
It is, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have another call.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're talking about the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust and Cocoa Palms.
Yeah, well, what I think should be done with that property, and I've advocated it for many years, is the county of Kauai should take it by eminent domain and give it back to the Hawaiian people. And it should be the seat and headquarters of the independent nation of Hawaii, or the independent nation of Atui. I think anyone other than the Hawaiians should not own it, have it, or use it except with the permission of the Hawaiian people.
Well, that you're expressing a sentiment that was very similar to an earlier caller.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that...
I am, and there's a lot more of that sentiment out there. And, well, basically, that's all I have to say. It was the Hawaiians. It was taken from them. It was taken from them illegally. Who are we, or you, or anyone else, to take it again and use it for some purpose other than for what the Hawaiians themselves wish it to be?
And that brings up a good point, too, which is that the land trust, and I said this at the beginning of the process, but or the beginning of the show today, but we're happy to act as a catalyst for this process and to get the conversation moving, but we also acknowledge the possibility that the community may determine at the end of the process that the land trust isn't the most appropriate end owner for this property, that there may be, you know, a new nonprofit that could spring up and run the property and run the organization and manage the property, or another more appropriate organization. So I want to make sure, I think you brought up a good point in the sense that it may, you know, there may be somebody else that's more appropriate as the end owner, the long-term owner, but the land trust, you know, is really happy and hopeful that we can act as a catalyst and just get the conversation going and do a lot of the due diligence and maybe some of the heavy lifting, you know, when it comes to the fundraising if we choose to go in that direction.
Some kind of midwifing the process.
Well, good luck.
That's
and,
a great way to say it, yeah.
good luck, and I wish you well, and I hope that the Hawaiian people end up with it because it's theirs.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box. We're talking about Hawaii Island Lands Trust and the Cocoa Palms, the transition of the Cocoa Palms property into something new and amazing.
Yeah, I heard that. That sounds like maybe a good idea for somebody. I had a question for Ms. Luck.
Yes.
Have you had any affiliation with the present or in the past with the Public Land Development Corporation?
No, the PLDC, Public Land Development Corporation, is a state agency. And so, no, the Land Trust is a private nonprofit. We have no interaction with, never have, with the PLDC. It's very separate, so absolutely not.
What do you protect the land from, or who, and what is, like, your vision of your what your corporation is doing?
Could you, caller, if I could just ask you to turn your radio down a little bit because we're getting a little bit of feedback. Thank you.
I'm asking.
There we go. Yeah, you're fine now.
We're a organization, not a corporation, so we're a nonprofit organization. Basically, our mission is to protect land in perpetuity. We protect land from development, so we... And the type of land that we protect is varied. I talked about this a little bit earlier, but I'm happy to say it again. You know, lands, we try and secure beach access for people, so provide public access to beaches. We purchase land that has recreational value, so that could just serve simply as a popular beach park and place to surf and take your family.
Like Black Sand or Black Pod Beach.
Black Pod Beach Park or Rock Quarry, Kahili Beach, which we own. We protect the lands of agricultural value, so either owning fee simple lands that are have agricultural zoning or putting conservation easements on them so that farmers can continue to farm their land. And then lands with cultural significance, whether there be cultural sites on the property or maybe it's significant because of legend or stories that come from that place. And then, of course, endangered species habitat as well. So we, you know, our mission really is to protect land from development, to protect the places that are really significant and important, whether it be culturally significant or ecologically significant, to the people of Kauai and to the people of Hawaii so that they can be protected in perpetuity. And generations from now, those places are unchanged and still available and open to the public.
Could any land in your under your control ever be converted back to private ownership and sold?
No. If for some reason the land trust ceased to exist, all of our lands would go to a similarly missioned organization or possibly the state, but not without restrictions being placed on it. So no, it wouldn't be turned over to a private developer or sold for benefit.
Like to a private owner or one of the previous owners that maybe was just like putting land on the side conveniently until they wanted to develop it. That is what I'm asking.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't happen.
Okay, I just really am concerned with all the interest in our aina here for sale or for whatever uses. So we're really stressed to the limits on building and whatnot. And I think it's time that everybody asks questions like this.
Well, thank you, caller. I appreciate you doing that.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay. No more calls right now. So, you gave out all your contact information. Want to do that one more time then, and then we'll move on to another topic, perhaps?
Sure. So again, my name is Jennifer Luck, and it's the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. Our website is www.hilt.org. My direct line is 755-5707, and my email is jennifer@hilt.org. And we're doing our membership drive right now, so if you're interested in supporting the organization or learning more, or giving a gift of membership to somebody that you know that would be interested in getting involved, then please call me directly or email me, or you can check out our website as well.
And that's hilt.org.
Correct.
Cool.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming to the studio and talking with us.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And I'd like to invite you to come back again when the process is a little more mature.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll take you up on that.
All right.
We'll be back in a minute. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
I really enjoyed your speaker today.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Her heart is in the right place, and makes me proud of her, whoever she is.
Jennifer Luck.
Yeah, it makes me proud of her as a human being, even though it must be said that Pele could take back the land anytime she wants.
Well, that's a different story, though, right? We have no control over that.
Of course, but that's part of the cultural heritage of Hawaii, is a deep reverence to the Almighty. And, of course, we all hope that doesn't happen anytime soon. But anyways, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for calling. Okay, well, let's see. You've got 20 minutes left in the show. We're just going to open up the phones for general discussion. One thing I want to, so they're open, 826-7771. I want to mention, though, coming up next Thursday, August 15th, there's the 2013 Kauai Energy Conference, subtitled After Oil, Managing the Transformation at the Kauai Marriott Resort and Beach Club.
After Oil?
After Oil.
You mean oil is not going to be here forever?
I don't believe it will be. You know, I think we're running out. We've hit the peak. They can no longer produce it at the rate that they used to, and so we're on the backside of the peak oil here. So,
That's actually kind of a big deal. I'd like to take a moment and let me just finish this up here then.
This is offered by the County of Kauai Office of Economic Development and KIUC. Join business, government, and community leaders and other industry experts for the 6th annual energy conference at the Kauai Marriott Beach Resort. This year's theme is After Oil, Managing the Transformation, that looks back at the origins of renewable energy on Kauai, the growth of various renewable energy sources, and how we must carefully manage these new sources into our grid and our energy portfolios on Kauai.
Well, I think that what I wanted to say about that, about After Oil, Managing the Transition, is hallelujah and hooray that we no longer have to debate about peak oil anymore. We had the discussion. We had the debate. People said it's peak oil. Other people said no, it's not. And now we're done with that. You know,
right?
We're past that. We're over that. People are recognizing the fact that oil is not going to be here forever. Just like every other single resource we've ever had exploited before has not lasted forever.
Right. We're in the peak everything, really, at this point. And so if you want information about this conference, go to the KEDB.com website or call Marlene Duarte at KEDB 245-6692. So, yeah, it sounds like a pretty interesting conference coming up. Now, one thing that's happened just in the last couple of years, and it was kind of gradual, and not everybody noticed it, but it has a very profound impact on our energy supplies, our energy use, is the price of oil has doubled in the last 5 years.
Yeah, what are we at right now? It's like about 110,
yeah. Actually, you know, probably right 2007. Right before the economic collapse, the last one, it was about $40, $35 a barrel. Now it's over 100. So it's doubled the price of gasoline at the pumps. I saw here in Princeville $4.90.
Sure,
$4.80, something like that.
Where I come from, we just call it $5.
That's $5 a gallon.
$5 a gallon, folks.
And so I feel that every time I fill up my car, $70-$80 for a tank of gas nowadays, you know, that's got to have a big impact on everybody. Everybody's driving, you know, especially the lower income folks. So, you know, we're already there. This isn't a debate as to when is it going to happen. It's happening right now.
No, and I'm really glad to see that some of the more mature organizations on our island are no longer playing fussy butt about it and are just going with the premise, hey, you know what, after oil, what are we going to transition to? How are we going to transition our behavior? So those are good questions. We got a caller calling in. Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Yeah. You guys want to talk about chemical companies?
Sure. You know, I wanted to see if anyone out there was interested in talking about the deferral on 2491.
My main concern about the deferral is that it's going to give these companies time to get embedded on the east side, in these lands up above Kealia and behind Onahola. 2 months is a long time.
Well, it's not 2 months. It's only till September 9th.
Is it 4 weeks?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well,
30
still,
days.
You know,
30
still,
days.
Every delay gives them the chance to start a new area of...
Sure.
Production.
That's sure, it's more time for the camel to get their nose under the tent somewhere else.
Yeah, so I was, I think you know, and I know that even though these chemicals are officially safe when used as directed
by a doctor,
that they're not really safe at all. So one
no,
of the,
well, I don't think anybody really thinks they're safe. I mean, realistically, we're talking about managing risk, right?
Well, Yes, we are. But the opposing side keeps saying that these chemicals are safe, and they've been approved by the FDA, whoever. I don't think they're safe even when used as directed. So I went looking, and one of the controversial ones, of course, is 2,4-D.
Sure.
So I went to Wikipedia, and here's the very first, here under history. It was discovered independently in both the U.S. and the U.K. in 1941. It was both cases the researchers were part of a clandestine wartime effort by their governments to create chemical warfare agents for use in World War II. Because the chemical's ability to kill weeds was accidental and not the aim of the research in either country.
They're like, hey, this stuff kills weeds too.
Because of the international legal reasons, research of this sort was never done openly. Research, production, and use of chemical warfare agents were illegal actions under the Geneva Protocol. A plausible cover story was needed, and for both the Allies and the Axis powers, the civilian label of agricultural was often used to conceal illegal and or secret chemical warfare research. So that's how 2,4-D got started, was to kill people in wartime.
That doesn't sound very kosher.
So now we come down to the paragraph entitled Dioxin Impurities. Some preparations are contaminated with dioxins due to the manufacturing process.
And these are impurities, dioxin impurities.
Yes,
yeah?
And one of them is TCDD, and I won't go into the long name. Contamination is predominantly of the type with two or three chlorine atoms. Another form of dioxin, DCDD, was found to be equally as potent as TCDD. In its toxic effect.
So these are carcinogenic substances.
Yes. TCDD received all the publicity, while the DCDD component was largely forgotten. To this day, DCDD is not regulated or monitored by the EPA and the PMRA, even though DCDD levels could be much higher than levels than TCDD. So, 2,4-D is toxic to the liver in small doses, increases liver function, jaundice, acute hepatitis, lobular and portal inflammation, toxic reaction. There's reports of permanent damage leading to cirrhosis in exposed golfers. I understand that this comes from a weird practice of picking up your golf ball and licking it, maybe to clean it off or something.
Yeah, I know people that do that.
Yeah.
I don't recommend it.
I just wanted to put it out there that this chemical, 2,4-D, which is pending approval to be sprayed on 2,4-D-resistant corn and eventually some of these other things, is actually fantastically carcinogenic because of this form of dioxin that, as the article says, is not regulated either by the EPA or this other chemical watchdog thingy of the federal government. So, you know, just another factoid to think about when these companies say that what they're doing is safe because they're following the label, and it's all a crock. So.
Right.
Anyway, thank you for your time.
All right, thanks for calling. All right.
You have another caller calling
yeah.
in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the previous caller whether dioxin is not totally inert. In other words, in any amount in food or drink or water or anything can be lethal or at least cancer. Causing.
Is there a safe limit? Is that what you're asking?
No, there's no safe limit for it.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, now one thing that came out of this deferral is that, and this, you know, the county council deferred debate on this bill.
Sure.
It shows that, you know, that there's opposition on the part of the council, that they may be overwhelmed by this decision, and maybe it's too much to ask of them to pursue this process. I mean, they some of them get money from the companies, you know, and they're
in terms of their reelection strategies. Yeah,
so they take money in their campaign donations, and they in some respects feel like they need to support those companies, you know, and they do. You know, anywhere else it would be corruption. Here it's just business as usual and politics.
So what do you think is the remedy for that?
Well, I've heard discussion about there perhaps being a citizen referendum.
Initiative of some kind.
Would it be an initiative or a referendum?
I think it'd be an initiative here on Kauai.
Citizens initiative. Okay.
Yeah, a direct ballot initiative.
So they would take the exact bill or, you know, massage it to something similar.
Why not stiffen it up a little bit?
You know, or maybe take out some offensive, some provisions that some people may have a problem with, and then let the voters decide. You know, make a petition, go around, get signatures, and put it on the ballot in November. And so are you familiar with that process then, Jonathan? Do you know what it would take? When would these things have to be in to get on November's ballot? Or is it too late for this year?
No. Now is a great time to start for all that. What you need to have is you need to have 20% of the number of signatures of the registered voters in the last election cycle.
Okay, so that
I called up the elections.
Oh,
folks.
You already have this.
I already have the number. Okay. And it was around 40,000 people. Let me get the exact number here.
40,000 voted. So
40,000 or so. 40,738 people were registered at the last election cycle. So 20% of that, if you want to do the math, it's
8,000.
It's around 8,000 or so. Yeah. And so you need to get around 8,000 signatures in order to get something on the ballot. And that would have to happen by about August or so of next year, of 2014.
Oh, it couldn't happen this year.
No, you'd start now.
No, I mean, but it can't be on this November's ballot.
I don't think there is a ballot this November.
There's no ballot. There's no election this year at all.
No election this year.
So, why not? Why can't we give our input into the running of our government this year? Why is there no...
You want to have a special election?
Yeah,
Actually, it works out okay, though, Dave, because you need to get you want to get more than you need.
So, yeah, but...
So you want to get, like, 10,000 signatures, really.
But it would have to be this month to get on November.
No, it would have to be August of 2014 to get on the ballot for next year, okay. Which is good because it gives you time to get the signatures. It gives you... You need to get about 1,000 signatures a month from September and October, November, and all the way through spring and summer of next year so that you have your big pile of signatures ready.
Right.
At the end. And, you know, it's good for the council to know, hey, guess what, council? If you're going to dawdle on getting bills that are the people's essential work done, if you're going to delay and defer on that, well, hey, then maybe the people of Kauai will just move right around you and take care of it themselves.
Right. We have a couple of callers on the line. Let's try and get them in before the end of the show.
Sure.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. If you could be quick here. We only have a few minutes left.
I will. I'm glad you're talking about this. And by the way, your last two callers are really wonderful people. They call all the time, and I always listen to them because they're very wonderful people. I admire them greatly. But I think you're right, Dave. The deferral is just like a smokescreen, like as in, well, look, you know, we're just going to make it look like we're thinking about it, but we're not going to vote for the bill.
Well, delay is one of the prime weapons that the opposition has on Bill 2491.
Well, the delay just makes me feel like it's not going to pass, and they're just doing it to save a little face. We'll see what happens. I don't know, you know, but, you know, but you guys are posing the question, if it doesn't pass, then what and how long, you know, and I'm glad you're bringing it up because the deferral to me, it's just like it makes me feel sick to my stomach, like, oh, my goodness, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, it's just, you know, we'll see how it goes, you know, but I'm glad that guy especially the caller before the last caller. He always calls. I think he lives on the west side. That guy is so wonderful, you know.
He's pretty Akamai, yeah.
Yeah, I wish he was on the city council. I wanted to encourage him to run for council next election.
Yeah, and he always waits till the end of the show to call.
We don't know what he looks like, but we all know what his voice is like, you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, caller. We'll go quickly to the next caller.
The last one we have time for.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, I just want to thank you guys for covering a lot of ground.
All right.
And, you know, we'll try to pick up where you left off next week with the show going in. You know, a focus on just what we've got to be thinking about. What's next?
Yeah, well, and how long do we want to wait before what's next? And maybe the time to begin the process is now.
Well, and I think it's just, you know, hats off to everybody getting involved, engaging themselves at whatever level possible, because that's all we can do, and trying to find some solutions into this. If we think that government is the answer to this, we're wrong. Right, we have that's an unrealistic expectation. Government just doesn't really work well that way, you know. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate that we're so cynical that we just think the worst of any given situation in regards to political decisions. But we have example after example of, you know, just how things, if you will, fail, and to have a vote to defer the bill, you know, for 2 months is looking at failure, because we are experiencing it. I mean, me personally, not nearly as much as the folks that are downwind from some of those practices that are happening. I mean, I'm just thankful my daughter isn't having nosebleeds or you know, having a number of different health ailments. This isn't something that, you know, just you know, all of a sudden started happening.
No, this didn't come out of nowhere.
No, exactly.
These are all here for real reasons.
To expect that they were going to make a decision on Monday, you know, after the first public hearing, I think is kind of an unrealistic expectation as well. But, you know, we're disappointed because we wanted to have things move forward, and a lot of us perceive this as, oh, it's a stall tact. Oh, they're going to, no, they're on the take. These guys want to get jobs at the seed company after they get, you know, after term limits or whatever. You know, I don't think that's really helpful. I do think it's helpful to think about, okay, so we the people, what do we want to do? How do we want to correct this situation? And you know, we've got somebody at the federal level that we think has an eye for this, an ear for this, a heart for it. You know, Tulsi Gabbard is a young, we certainly know she's not an entrenched politician in Washington, right? She's certainly not like Neil Abercrombie or what was the last guy that was in office. I mean, all the Dans have been, you know, you can't really kind of separate them from that whole existence.
No, they were an edifice that was there for quite some time, decades, really.
And you know, we'll have to look at how Colleen Hanabusa and I guess her campaign manager or someone involved in her strategy team is resigning and been involved with some kind of, I guess, alleged wrongdoings. And it, like you said, Dave, this is elsewhere, it's corruption, right? And here it's just kind of like, well, that's how they do business.
That's right.
But we don't have to subscribe to that. I'm not like really good friends with you know, our council members. You know, I don't socialize with them, but I do trust them. I mean, I'm really kind of skeptical of the thought that Nadine Nakamura doesn't want to, you know, do something as a government official to protect people because she recognizes this isn't right. I know Ross Kagawa has concerns about what's going on in his old stomping grounds. You know, how could you not? You know, and to think that those guys, you know, Mel Raposo doesn't want to see like some kind of legislative action. He just doesn't want to go to court. He doesn't want to have the county engage in another costly lawsuit where we end up paying. But guess what? There's a price to bear. You know, this stuff doesn't come free.
Right.
And we need, whether it's more federal regulators, more state inspectors, county.
Or maybe even more minutes in the hour, Jimmy.
Well, we'll get there next week, brother.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, thanks, you guys.
All right.
Aloha.
Take up where we left off.
Aloha, Jimmy. That was Jimmy Trujillo. Yeah. You'll catch him next week. We're about done for today, huh, Dave?
That's all the time we have. It's time now for Acoustic Luau with Marin, so stay tuned for a great show. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for another installment of Out of the Box. Thanks for all the calls and for Jennifer Luck for coming in the studio.
Yeah,
today.
Aloha, ahui ho, and malama pono, folks. Malama aina.